We don't need to go through the. Yes. So I'll just maybe go forward like 10 and we'll see where we're at. A few more, please. Okay, here we go. One backup one. All right, so the county staff, planning department staff have made a determination that the implementation of a comprehensive plan is likely to have an adverse environmental impact or effect. And because of that, you know, then we have the determination to prepare this programmatic environmental impact statement. And we have to do it consistent with state law and the county's regulations. So there was a determination, it was 3 pages or so. It looks like you've got that in front of you, and that was published and made available to the public. And it outlines the alternatives, and we're accepting comments, you know, for this scope of the environmental impact statement for the next 30 days. Actually, it ends later this month now because we're a couple weeks already into it, or a week or so into it. There are 3 alternatives that have been formulated in the EIS, and these are draft. So, like, if you have some ideas on things that we should consider in one or more of the alternatives, we can still adjust it. We can adjust it all the way through to the preparing and issuing of the draft EIS. And we can even adjust it between the draft and the final. But the 3 alternatives, every EIS has what's called a no action or no change alternative, which is basically just maintaining the status quo. That doesn't mean that growth doesn't occur. It just means that growth occurs within kind of the existing constraints. So the existing zoning, the existing land use designations, nothing else changes, right? And so we have that no action to be able to compare the 2 other alternatives against it to see what's different. What would be the same? What would be different? So the other alternatives, one we're calling an aggressive growth, which is put the hammer down on energy projects. You know, let's have as many energy projects as possible in the county. We want to have Amazon build small modular reactors out at Hanford. We want to have renewable energy projects all going through FSEC. We want to have new solar, smaller projects. Wherever we can do energy in the county, that's part of that alternative too. Another part of that alternative is to create more opportunities for industrial development. So try and get more economic growth through energy and industrial development, and also provide for housing, higher density housing in the unincorporated area, maybe primarily in the UGAs, but you could have maybe some additional housing like in Finley or in Whitstrand or Patterson or Plymouth, right? And so that alternative, so like if the no action is on this side, alternative 2 is kind of way out here. It's like if you just kind of did everything that anybody wanted to do in terms of development, not everything, but I mean, if you had a pretty aggressive growth strategy, it could look something like alternative 2. And then alternative 3 is more of a moderate growth target, which is looking at affordable housing going all into the cities that, you know, we don't really have necessarily maybe the infrastructure or the amenities, transit, those types of things that go along with affordable housing, you know, where people often aren't able to afford vehicles and all of that. So they are able to have shopping close by, transit to be able to get to like places of employment and to other places that they would frequent. But we're saying most of that housing would go into the cities. We would still do some energy projects, but it would be more focused outside of like ag lands or habitat lands in areas that are maybe already previously disturbed. And then we'd also consider revisions to industrial land designation, but in a more limited way, instead of trying to take advantage of potentially every area that might support industrial like Alternative 2 does. So the reason why we have these three alternatives is to be able to compare and contrast impacts on a variety of different environmental factors. And so if we go to the next slide, Michelle, this talks about what we look at. So industrial development, energy development, housing development, and impacts that it has on the earth, water, plants and animals, land use, environmental health, which includes both like it says land quality is not, but environmental health impacts from the land. You think of the good example of that is Hanford, right? There are cleanup activities and there's environmental risks associated with that, with air quality and different types of development. You can also have air quality risks associated with like greenhouse gas emissions or that kind of thing. We look at shorelines, we look at population, housing, employment, parks and recreation, transportation, public services and utilities. And then heritage conservation is includes both looking at impacts to cultural resources, like tribal resources, as well as historic resources, you know, structures that are 50 years and older, which we were walking around the corner of the courthouse tonight and like, oh, the courthouse is going to have its 100-year birthday next year. It was built in 1926, so 2026 will be its 100-year birthday. This is a historic structure, so we have to consider the effects, you know, of those alternatives on the historic structures as well. So those are the elements of the EIS that we're going to evaluate. There may be others that members of the public suggest. We're having a meeting soon with Department of Fish and Wildlife to go through the alternatives in the EIS, and they're going to give us some more specific things that they want to have us consider as far as potential effects in the document. So members of the public might have information as well that they want us to consider that we hope to receive from them before April 25th. Next slide. So where do we go from here? So we need comments postmarked or delivered to the county before April 25th. That's the mailing address. Their future meeting dates and times will be at that location. We're here tonight for the EIS scoping, and then we've already talked about these workshops. We'll be coming back to share with you additional information in June, July on housing and the energy overlay, critical areas review, and what we learned from the scoping process, which if tonight is any indication, it may not get that much comment in this process, but we provide the opportunity, and if people don't take advantage of it, that's not, you know, something we have control over. And then the open houses in September, October, and then, you know, you're going to be receiving goals and policies. Oh.
Look, we have a member of the public.
Is this a member of the public?
Yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, good.
So we may just back up a little bit to go through some of this.
Would you like me to go?
Well. Let's ask him a few questions and find out what his background is.
You guys know the alternatives that Ben laid out are kind of the high level, so we're expecting, just based on recent applications and development, energy sector and energy projects are coming up, so we need to start planning for that and how we might be able to do that, or like Ben said, if they're all going through the state. So that's going to be a big one. And then another one that we've asked Ben and his team to do is the industrial lands analysis. And so those are kind of the two big ones that we know if we increase energy or industrial lands, that it may have an environmental impact beyond what whatever was happening in 1983. So those are kind of the two high-level ones. I'm sure there's going to be plenty of other ones in the alternatives, but those are kind of the most pressing ones that we saw having a major impact on the environment potentially.
And additional residential development as well.
Yeah.
So you are a single member of the public.
Am I?
Yes.
I'm not really representing the public. I'm representing Ben PV.
Okay. So then you know what we're doing. Okay. So we just went through, before you got here, the scope of the EIS, and if it's okay, we have a whole background on the comp plan and that process. We're happy to provide that PowerPoint to you for the front part of it, and we'll just review the EIS part of this, if that's all right with you. So then you can kind of, and if you have, we'll give you an opportunity to provide some public comment here in a few minutes as well. So the county's determined that the comprehensive plan may provide, may have a significant adverse effect on the environment, and so they've determined that an environmental impact statement is appropriate to prepare. Just for your context, the county has a 1983 EIS that supports their comprehensive plan, and we've done addendums to that EIS for the last several updates, and they decided that wasn't really appropriate anymore, and so we were receiving funding through the state, and so we're able to do a more complete environmental impact statement.
Sure.
There are three alternatives that are in the EIS that we're going to be looking at. Did you see the scoping notice? Are you familiar with
that? I'm familiar with it.
Okay, yeah, so we have a no action, right, which we compare the other two alternatives against. The second alternative is really focused on three kind of major areas of development, in addition to like the ongoing, you know, housing development that occurs in the county. One is to try and provide more affordable housing in maybe Findlay, Prosser, or Whitstrand, Plymouth, Patterson, maybe some of the areas around the Tri-Cities, urban growth areas. There's a new state law that's been passed, a requirement where we have to provide for what's called middle housing, which is like low to moderate income housing in addition to, so you have different income bands against the median, and you have to provide for housing for all of that. In alternative two, the county would try to figure out how to do that in an area where, you know, property values are going up and where they don't have the services that are often associated with more affordable housing, like close shopping, transit, and all of that. Rural areas don't have those same kind of services. But that alternative would consider that. And then the county, we're doing an industrial lands inventory and analysis and coming up with potential additional industrial lands that might be designated on top of what exists, like in Findlay and other areas. And there's a lot of ag-related development that happens in the GMA ag lands as well. But we would try to do quite a bit more industrial designations and then see what that might build out to look like. And then all of the energy projects that are going through FSEC right now, plus potentially other energy projects that are like near your substations or in disturbed areas, in between like circles and stuff, where you could do smaller scale solar or whatever. We're gonna evaluate kind of like if we just put the hammer down for industrial development and energy and housing, what would those effects look like? So that's kind of the other end of the spectrum. And then the alternative three is kind of in the middle. It's housing would occur within the cities primarily. There would be an energy overlay that would be applied in the county, but it would be more constrained by habitat, GMA ag lands, so we don't develop ag lands into energy projects that are you know really important for the ag economy. And then some industrial designated areas, but not to the same extent as alternative two. It'd be more surgical and kind of, and it could be like, it could also be an overlay as well, although we kind of already have that in the GMA ag. And there could be some ag lands that get taken out, like in the Findlay area where you've got largely kind of what's been built out. And there's the other ag lands that are developed, but they're not or that are designated but are not necessarily developing. So we'll consider that kind of what might be the preferred. So alternative three will likely end up being evolve into the preferred alternative in the final EIS. That's kind of what we're shooting for. We have these EIS elements: earth, water, plants and animals, land use, environmental health, etc. If you think there's anything else that we need to consider, we've got utilities in there already, and that includes Benton PUD and Benton REA. But if there's any other elements, we would welcome comments on that. Obviously, we'll look at each of those alternatives and their impacts on these different environmental factors. And then next steps, we are looking for comments by April 25th. And after that date, after we receive the comments, we will put together a scoping report, summarize the comment letters that we received, what the specific comments are. We'll kind of organize those by topics and share that with the Planning Commission, and it'll be made available on the county's website. You can email your comments at that email address. And then after we have the scoping period ends and we do the scoping report, then we'll start preparing the EIS. At the same time, we're updating the comprehensive plan. And there will be several workshops with the Planning Commission to walk through those. So June and July, we'll be looking at housing and energy overlay analysis, updates to the critical areas code, and then the scoping report. In September, October, we'll have some more public open houses, more focused on the comprehensive plan and some of the changes that we're envisioning to get feedback on that. The EIS scenarios will be more fleshed out at that point, and we'll have maps that kind of go along with it. So we'll be able to show, like, okay, what does alternative two look like? What does alternative three look like compared to the no action? We'll have recommended updates for goals and policies. And then in December, we start working on the land use elements, the rural element, and some of the other elements of the comprehensive plan. And that will take us through like February, March of next year. And then we'll have a draft EIS, a draft comprehensive plan update, draft development regulations, and we'll start going through the review and approval process, final comp plan, final EIS by June of 2026. So with that, that is my presentation. Planning Commission members, any questions or comments? What you've heard?
Well, I've heard several comments from different people in the public that they want to see the county get away from wind farms. They're aesthetically not pleasing, and they would prefer to see more focus on these small nuclear power plants.
Okay, great.
I would say the same towards the solar. I've seen solar, and it takes a lot of property out of everything.
Yeah, we like to go camping down in Morrow County and ride ATVs and dirt bikes down there. And you, on your way down to Heppner, you drive right through these solar areas, and they're pretty extensive.
Yeah, 415 square miles out of Hanford is plenty of room for power plants.
Yeah.
And another comment I've heard is some of these projects are going out in the county, interrupt the wildlife, especially the endangered species, that for some reason Fish and Wildlife doesn't want to recognize.
We've had a lot of meetings with Fish and Wildlife talking about energy projects, and this When we come back to you in June and July with the discussion about the energy overlay concept that we're looking at, we'll share with you some of the ways that we've considered protecting habitat, open space as part of that. And the Department of Fish and Wildlife also has some new rules that have just come out on energy projects and how they get sited and how they protect habitat and stuff, so we can share that information with you as well.
Now, since we have a representative from Benton County PUD,
yeah,
how much of the power generated by these wind farms stays locally and how much goes out in the different states.
He doesn't buy any of it. It's too expensive.
So it doesn't.
With the subsidy that they have, it's too expensive.
So it doesn't stay here.
No. We buy our electricity for about 3.6 cents a kilowatt hour from Mongol Power Administration, and the typically, well, we haven't seen anything less than like 40 to 42 cents a kilowatt, or 4.2 to 4.5 cents per kilowatt hour. So if you add that up, you know, in the thousands and millions, it's not economically feasible.
So there's no benefit to the county of having those wind farms except for the money generated from permits?
Permits, the initial construction, you're going to create some jobs, right, as, you know, as a custodian to the Nine Canyon Wind Project that's south of the Tri-Cities there, or south of Kennewick. It's about 95 megawatts, so it's like 1/8 the scale of this thing that they're trying to build out here. I think they employ about 4 people now.
Yeah, it's insignificant when it comes to operations.
So long term, there's no benefit.
Yeah, and just speaking from Event DD, kind of, I don't know how many of you have heard our general manager talk, speak about this, but it's very dilute. You know, we all live around here. When it's 105 degrees outside, the wind's not blowing. And when it's 0 degrees outside, the wind's not blowing. So one of the things that we've kind of, through all a bunch of studies that have happened, is the efficacy factor of a wind farm in this part of the state is about 8%. So to get, say, you wanted to get 100 megawatts of generation average annual over the entire year is about 8 megawatts of output for every 100 megawatts that you put in. That's the kind of information that, you know, is we're screaming at the top of our lungs as a public agency too. So we're not really for it. You know, sometimes, you know, the I don't know where the zeal for it comes from. You know, and solar panels, you mentioned those earlier too. It takes about 5 acres to make 1,000 kW of solar panel generation.
And what's the life expectancy of a solar panel?
Before about 25 years.
Yeah. With a declining.
Yeah, in about 25 years, they declined to about 80% of what they were brand new. That doesn't include any of the electronics breaking or anything like that.
Yeah. We can talk later after the meeting, and I can share with you where I feel the zeal is coming from.
Well, I'm pretty sure I know.
So you commented that the county wants to basically align with the state.
I don't think I said that. If I said that, or if it sounded like I said that, that's not what I meant. I'm not even sure specifically align with what you're talking about. Are you talking energy or?
Right.
I think the one statement was housing, high density housing, possibly.
Well, so
I did hear something along the lines of there being a state guideline.
There's a state requirement.
Right.
There's a state requirement that we have to address that in the comprehensive plan update. So do all the cities. So we're actually meeting with the cities a week from Friday to go through a proposed allocation. And in that proposed allocation, all of the low to moderate income housing, emergency shelter housing, all of that is going to go into the cities where the amenities are. And the cities have more or less agreed to that.
Yeah.
And we're Kennewick residents. It makes more sense to have that be in a city than out in the unincorporated area.
And just speaking for the energy factor, is that after we got through the initial Horse 7 project, the planning department was directed by the county commissioners to evaluate the potential for siting energy projects in Benton County, with the notion that the county commissioners generally don't support that, especially on agricultural lands. And so with this money from the state, we've hired Ben and his team to analyze potential available areas that projects could be sited. We're not seeing any great returns, or like Ben mentioned, they're going to be very small, if at all. But that came after the initial FSEC process and the control being taken out of the local jurisdiction. So the county commissioners want to bring control back to the county, if at all possible, without them going and to FSEC and overriding us. And so those projects we're looking at are probably 100 acres or less.
It would have been nice to have PUD here when the previous wind farms were brought before us to have information like that brought.
Well, they came to us too. They wanted us there. We have to, and when those projects actually, if they ever do come to fruition, because we're the a retail provider, you know, especially would be actually in down the wind farm that they're going to build out, that they are trying to build down here. There's a collector station and a BPA substation that they're fixing to build. The BPA is going to get their substation built no matter what. The utility has to be involved because we provide what we call retail service. So if in the event in the middle of the winter time, the wind is blowing, but they have to keep the gearbox oil warm, they have to do all the lights, they have to do all that stuff, they're consuming electricity. So we have to have a meter in there that we can sell them electricity with. And so we have to be involved in it at some point. If you're reluctant, it's kind of like you don't want to be involved with it, but we have to, because we are a retail party, depending on where out in the county the service is at.
So yeah,
it's been an REA, at least for us. We don't really deal with the city of Richland much, because they're quite a bit smaller.
Yeah.
And PUD did submit comments to FSEC for the Horseheaded Wind Farm, yes, in opposition to the project. So they were the only utility that provided comments at all. But they also stood with county against the project.
PUD has our general manager wrote, with the blessing of our three commissioners, a white paper pretty much condemning wind in the area. Mm-hmm. You know, the rootness of it is a problem, because it doesn't take the place of firm generation. I don't know if you guys are familiar, firm generation is always on. Think gas turbines, gas-fired power plants, coal-fired power plants. Even the hydro system is variable to some degree because of the water flow. Mm-hmm. But there is a minimum value that you're going to get out of that all the time. Wind, for every megawatt of wind that you think you're going to get, you have to have something to back it up when the wind's not blowing.
Right.
And then the other thing that everybody touts is battery technology and stuff like that. Well, most of the batteries that are on the market right now are good for about 4 hours of discharge. What about the other 4 days?
Yeah.
When the wind's not there to charge the batteries back up.
Yeah.
You know, that's the deficiencies of it.
Yeah.
It's just the way it is. It's the way physics works. I don't know what to tell people, but
battery technology has not moved as quickly as they thought it would 2 or 3 years ago, and the storage capability is
the battery technology is very much going to be a glut on natural resources. Even the EVs, and I don't know if anybody has EVs, but my boss, Rick Dunn, is general manager of PUD, does all this research and throws these little tidbits out. But an EV vehicle isn't really carbon free until it hits about 70,000 miles for the amount of fuel and
to produce the battery.
To produce a car in general, for the lithium, all the reprocessing that it takes and stuff like that. So, that's just a fact.
Yeah.
Wind turbines get cut up and buried in landfills in Montana and Wyoming. Nobody talks about that sort of thing. The chemicals that are used to build, to grow the silicon wafers that go in solar panels is some pretty bad stuff.
Well, we've had testimony in the past from fire department about the hazardous materials.
Yeah, lithium battery, once it catches on fire, you can't put it out unless you have like a K-type fire extinguisher component going on. Water won't do it. Water makes it worse. It's like throwing water in a frying pan full of oil that's on fire.
Evan, is PUD going to submit comments for our EIS, or are you just here kind of on?
I'm just here to kind of listen about what's going on, and if you guys have any questions, you know, as far as the growth stuff, I wanted to hear about the energy. I kind of mm-hmm. more along the lines of alternate three, understanding that status quo can't stay the same with the amount of growth that we have. And then I was kind of curious about how the low income housing and things like that, you know, whether it was going to expand outside of the into the unincorporated parts of Kennewick and Prosser, Bend City, and the neighboring.
We haven't got there yet. We have our meeting next week, the city's on that, where we're kind of dividing up. The state is giving us targets, so a number we have to reach as the county, and then each jurisdiction is going to take their share of the pie, so we're hashing that out next week with the cities. We're not anticipating much go into this county except for in the urban growth areas, and there aren't many in urban growth areas left.
Right,
and
a lot of that boils down to the cities wanting to extend wet utilities to those locations, and City of Kennewick is doing it for their UGA as we speak right now.
Yeah.
So we're already well positioned for out there as far as light industrial, if that's what it's going
to
be.
Yeah. But I definitely invite you to come back for when we do the ag analysis or the energy overlay.
Yeah.
To come back for that one, and probably in the industrial too, just to see.
Yeah, shoot an email.
Okay.
We can do that. We'll definitely get you on we're building an interested parties list, which is,
sure,
you know, there's the official communications that's going to go to the PUD notice of that, but we can get you, you know, a direct email with information about what's going on when we have workshops and that kind of thing.
Michelle knows my email address.
Yes.
Evan and I talk frequently.
Okay.
I'm trying to get my
exhibits
ready for you.
And do you want me to show those initial maps that we have right now?
Sure.
They were in the PowerPoint. Let me see them.
They're hard to read.
They are. They're a little bit convoluted right now, but it kind of just gives you guys an idea of what Ben and his team's been doing. He's got a young man who's a pretty amazing at GIS analysis, and he's been taking our agricultural layers and having discussions with us about the projects and that sort of thing. But this one gives an interesting overview, because you can see the dark black lines are the proposed projects and the current projects, and 47 obviously dominates quite a bit, and then the other two on the Yakima County lines, just how much. What we're looking at on as a county right now is to not have it permissible in anything that could be agricultural land, irrigated or non. So anything that's green wouldn't be allowed to have
dark green, light green
process.
Yep.
Anything that's not green potentially could, but then we go to the other one, which is habitat, and pretty much anywhere that isn't ag has habitat. And so we're finding, like I said earlier, that there's not a lot of tracks large enough to make it feasible for a large scale project. So we may be seeing small projects like the Wallula Gap, which is between Patterson and Plymouth, and that's in the off section of a circle on an industrial scale farm. Kind of not necessarily waste ground, because there's some wetlands on it, but ground that's not being utilized or potentially can't be utilized in the future. So small, a couple hundred acres maybe at the max.
Yeah, and that Wallula Gap, they originally came to us for the connection, and we kind of turned them down. The variability of that and the night-to-day solar changeover with that system down along the Columbia River in Bend County runs at about 215 megawatts in the summertime, and it's all irrigation load.
Yeah.
And those kinds of loads don't behave very well with sudden drops or rises in voltage that can occur, and can occur on a major scale, especially if there's a 60 megawatt solar panel array sitting in the middle of the whole thing. And so we kind of went, hey, thanks, but no thanks. You guys probably should deal directly with Bonneville, because really our transmission system is for load service. It's not for conducting interstate commerce or you know, being able to provide it out to wherever they're trying to sell it.
Yeah, right. Well, that's interesting to know too. So those areas may not be that great either.
And if they, you know, I know that there's that one. There was another one over near Finley Road that had first rights refusal by the same agency or same company that was looking at these things. And the one, I think, has been completely shut down, which was the one on Finley Road. And the Wallula Gap was the one we told them. Agri Northwest is our largest customer, obviously.
Right.
We bend over backwards quite a bit to accommodate their wants and needs and things like that.
Sure.
We just couldn't pull the trigger because they don't know what something like this can do to the rest of their agricultural operations, you know.
Right.
The solar panel had a blip on it and it shut down, you know,
five
substations worth of pumping load all at one time.
Yeah.
And then they come back and go, Ben Peeney, what'd you do? We're like, man, it wasn't us. You know,
yeah.
We don't want to be in that position.
Yeah, understood. Yeah. We encourage you, Evan, to also provide any written comments, any reflection on the alternatives. Is there something else that should be considered, like impact the local load? I think is something that maybe we didn't have on the radar.
Yeah, because one of the things that I think a lot of people are missing is the EPA is way far behind on actual just capacity increases and stuff like that. They're swimming in an interconnection queue that is so deep that they don't have enough planners to
get their way out of it.
Step forward and tell you whether you can or can't or what it'll cost to get that hooked up or whatever.
Gotcha.
And so the incremental low growth, like residential neighborhoods and things like that, and that's light industrial, it's the right kind. You know, we're all for, you know, if it was a manufacturing facility and had 500 jobs,
yeah,
we probably, you know, be a little bit more accommodating.
Yeah, willing to figure out
the
solution.
We can do all kinds of stuff. It's just, you know, you show up a good example is like an energy, what do they call them? Energy intensive loads, like Bitcoin.
Right?
It was big. It's a very transient load. Those things can pick up and leave because you build them in Connex boxes.
Yep.
Or whatever, and you get hung with a $100,000 electric bill, and then you go to collect it and places crickets and they're all gone.
Yeah.
You know, those kinds of things are not what we were interested in.
Right.
And, you know, the guy who takes care of those four Connex boxes takes care of four of it up in Grant County and four over in, you know, Yakima. And then,
yep.
You know, and it's the one guy.
Yeah.
Somebody else down in Texas or back on the East Coast is collecting all the money because the electricity is relatively cheap.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cheap electricity is a highly
competitive commodity.
You know, it's a highly sought after resource. Ask Grant Community and Chelan. They have those kinds of people beating down their doors because their electricity is cheaper than ours is.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of happens when you own the dam that comes on, you know.
We work for Grand PUD too.
So,
you might also have some input on the industrial lands and what we come up with for them.
Yeah, probably would be, you know, those are kind of things where they're designated at is important because, you know,
how are you going to serve the growth?
Yeah, can I serve the growth for one? You know, so there's a couple of things to think about, like large loads, like over 10 megawatts and above, we have to go to Bonneville Power Administration, and that is what they call a new large load tariff. They don't get to buy the regular stuff that we buy for incremental load growth and to serve residences and stuff like that, the 3.6. Those types of loads will come in, and they will get quoted a price per megawatt hour or like $140, $130 a megawatt hour when we're paying 36.
Yeah.
And so when we say incremental load, 110 megawatts, that's what we want to see. It is the kind of things that we need that we can deal with pretty reasonably.
Okay.
Substations, we've got a lot of substations built around the areas.
Sure.
And we're actually pretty good at building that stuff. So, just a lot of times it's a matter of getting all the land rights to build transmission lines where we
right.
have to build them at.
Right. Well, I would say if you've got some ideas of where we should avoid looking at industrial land or areas where you think you could more easily serve, that would be a helpful input for us to know as we look at the industrial lands part of this as well. So, and then your information about energy projects, I think.
Excuse me.
If you have like facts and figures, kind of a white paper or something that you've submitted already to FSEC, just submit it again just to make sure we have it in this record, the administrative record for this process as well.
Okay.
And you know how to email Michelle.
Yep. Add that into the record for this as far as FSEC. Before we move over everybody's back.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, exactly. That's all I have for tonight. Evan, I'm glad you showed up. It helped us have a more robust discussion here.
My boss, my director goes, we have a meeting at 4. Who's going to Prosser? I was like, I don't know. I looked at him like, don't say me.
Hey, we got cookies.
Yeah.
Some cookies and some water. You can, fill your pockets.
All right.
Are there any other questions or comments?
No.
Not for today.
Okay. All right. Well, then that wraps up this public meeting.
I guess I'll move to adjourn.
Thanks, guys. We'll see you soon.